All right, thank you for listening to this podcast. This episode of Literally is sponsored by Lexicon and Line. Case, tell us a little something about Lexicon and Line.
Lexicon and Line, it does three things. They are communications consultants, they teach professional business writing and speaking courses, and they are research and data evaluation experts.
And you can find everything about Lexicon and Line at lexicononline.com. Please give them a visit, and thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast, Lexicon and Line. Confronting authors with real questions about the writing process, the difficult and disheartening publishing industry, and why anyone would choose to torture themselves in the world of writing, this is the Literally Podcast with your host, writer, runner, and the literary voice of Ogden, Utah, Case Johnston. Exposing literature, the authors, the business, the process, the Literally Podcast.
This is Case Johnston. This is the Literally Podcast. Today we are at a very social event, a Good Company Theater. Thanks so much to Alicia and Camille for having us. Today is a very special day. We are in coordination with the Utah Humanities Book Festival. We have 11 authors that have been on the podcast, and Amanda, who will be on the podcast, with us to just kind of chat about writing. We are not going to start with the question that is, when did you know you'd be a writer? For some of us, that's just too many decades ago. Sorry, Brad. And, you know, because we've all heard that question. We're all a little bit past that. So we're just gonna chat. I have one question to get us started, and with the people in this circle, really, I would prefer to be quiet for most of the podcast. There's no reason for me to chat unless to just get things started, because there's a wealth of information, of genres, of history, of knowledge within this group that I would hate to curtail that into anything that might be a little stilted. So I hope that you guys are ready to talk. This event is part of the 21st Annual Utah Humanities Book Festival. This annual free festival is the Utah Humanities gift to the community, allowing us to explore all sorts of ideas by interacting with great writers. The complete program is available at utahhumanities.org. Our thanks to the book festival's major sponsors, the George S. and Dolores Door Eccles Foundation, the R. Harold Burton Foundation, the Charles Redd Center for the Western Studies, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thanks to our Weber Book Link sponsors, Ogden School Foundation, the Treehouse Museum, Weber County Library System, the Queen Bee Booked on 25th Weber Storytelling Festival, Weber Storytelling Festival, Weber State College of Arts and Humanities, and Weber School Foundation. Information on all Weber County events is available at weberbooklinks.com. So we're part of the Utah Humanities Book Festival, and to get us started, I had one question, and I believe that everybody here, two people here don't fit this bill. So Allison and Danielle, you two are the outliers on this question. But as transplants to the West, I know that you'll have quite a bit. You'll have a different perspective than the rest of us. The rest of us are from the West, correct? Yeah, so we have people from Oregon, from California. Deborah, where are you from? Jeez.
I was born in Detroit.
Okay.
And raised in Michigan and Florida, mm-hmm. But I've lived all over the place, but I've lived in the West for 20, almost 30 years, I guess.
So that's that works.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you.
But you can give that perspective as well. And Allison's been here in Utah since 90, no? What? Fill it in.
Did you do any research at all?
Yeah. You're not from around here, are you?
Do you get that?
Which I get.
Yeah.
And so I've been here since 89, but it's the whole question that you bring up, where are you from, girl?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I did. Thanks, Allison. I appreciate that. So today, so that everybody knows who's docking, we'll be joined by Julianne Carter-Winward, Nicole Lowe, who isn't here, Amanda Yardley Luzader, how do you say it?
Luzader.
Chad Van Zanten, who just looks at me. Allison McLennan, Brad Rogar, Danielle Soucy, Shane Griffiths, Michael, who will be coming later today, Sean Davis, and Deborah Reed. So these, when you talk, at least with the first round, please give us your name, and then hopefully people start to recognize your voices. Okay, so for the first question really is, and for those three who have transplanted into the Western states, and for those of us who grew up in the Western states, many of us grew up in Utah, or Idaho, or, you know, very close, what do you think that living here or being in the West or transplanting to the West has informed a lot of your writing or any of your writing? And has, so for those who are transplants, did that, have you seen a change in that for those who grew up here? Has it always been there? And I have to say it for just really quickly for myself, every novel I've written, none published yet, we all know that, is in Ogden, Utah. Maybe that's why, maybe I should be in Detroit. Does anybody want to get started with kind of that place-based question?
It's Deborah. I'm already labeled a regional writer. There seems to be West Coast writers and East Coast writers, and when it comes to publishing. And I think, for me, a sense of place is very strong in my writing. It's very important to me as a writer, and the West encapsulates that for me. It's as much about the place as it is about the people who live there, and it feels very organic to me to have the sense of place set and then have the people grow up and out of that in my storytelling.
Sean Davis here. When I was growing up as a writer, through college and such, I studied with Craig Leslie, and Craig. Mm-hmm. He's amazing. Burning Fences, Winterkill. Where he set his book was a character, And I think that I kind of learned through that. I could be just as much as a character as any of your protagonists or anything else. And I noticed the same thing when I write novels. It's always set in the mountains where I live. I mean, I might have went down to Portland once or twice, but that's pretty much it. And it's just, I guess maybe it's easier because I know that place and I know the struggles that you would have living in that area. And I don't really know, on the East Coast. Although, I mean, I did write a little bit about Iraq because I was over there. And then I lived in Germany for 3 years. But yeah, even then I was writing about home, I guess.
I just want to comment that it's interesting because there is a sense of juxtaposition when you've lived somewhere else that's radically different from here. And where you're born is not necessarily always where you're home. And so for some of us who have relocated here from urban areas, it's been about the myth of going west, of finding wilderness, which does not exist in the East for the most part anymore. And so for me, I came here when I was 18, completely alone, by myself. There was a story in my family that my grandmother had also gone to Montana, mm-hmm, for a mysterious reason for 2 years and then returned to Boston. I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because I feel very rooted here, and yet, as I mentioned in my somewhat sarcastic comment, where are you from, girl? You're not from around here, are you? So for some of us, it's like we're always misfits, but we're trying to put down roots, and it's difficult when you're from somewhere else because people don't really trust you.
Sorry, I feel like I was born in Salt Lake City, so when I'm waiting for the microphone, my heart starts to beat really fast because I was raised Mormon. And in Mormon sacrament meetings, you get this heartbeat thing because you're thinking, I know I need to say, I believe in the church, and that must be the spirit telling me to do it, and I'm freaking out. So I'm like looking at the mic going, oh my gosh, it's time. It's, oh my God, here we go. I'd like to bury my testimony. So being from Salt Lake, I'm a transplant to Ogden. That's a huge deal. It is. I actually don't have any current books under my name that take place in Utah. But I take my setting very seriously. So I go to wherever it is I'm writing about, and I kind of immerse myself in what it is I'm writing about. One of the books, I spent a lot of time in the past when I was able to travel in San Francisco. So one of the books I wrote takes place in San Francisco. During that time, I did the research there, but I also went to LA. And I met with an adult film actress named Nina Hartley. I'm sure all of you men are going, we know who that is. We're not going to let on, we do. She has been in the adult entertainment industry forever. And I met with her in her condo, and she told me all about what I needed to know about this particular industry for this book. I went to Portland. I immersed myself there because there was just no way to capture the green of that place without immersing yourself in the beautiful green, that incredibly rich, moist, verdant place. So for me, it's very much about writing, yes, writing what you know, but also finding things you do not know and immersing yourself and then seeing it through the lens of a person who was raised in a desert, raised near the mountains, and understand that part of writing for me anyways is about discovering those new places and seeing it from a completely different point of view than a person who has lived their whole lives. So that was kind of my take on that. So, oh, sorry, Julianne J. A. Carter Winward. Sorry about that.
This is Danielle Susie. I think the most recent transplant to Utah of the group, and I've lived all across the country in different states. And Ogden is still urban, but the most rural place that I've ever lived. And I think in my poems, I like to have things that are breathing, not necessarily like, you know, animated with breath, but things that have breath. And when I was living in Chicago, to me, buildings were always like this thing that was like seizing and then expanding and then seizing and then expanding. And moving here, it's the mountains that do the same thing. And I drive from Ogden to Salt Lake for work every day, and you know, I see the Ochre Mountains when I drive on Legacy, and I see that and I feel that it's like pulsating the way that buildings do in Chicago in the summer. And for me, it's been about drawing comparisons between the urban and the rural and figuring out ways to sort of like hold up one map against another and think about how they relate to one another. So,
yeah, this is Shane Griffiths. I can't imagine writing a character without knowing the place that they're living in and possibly the place that they're from. Just everything about a place, the culture of a place, the landscape of a place. I think we breathe it deep into our bones and it affects our character. And some characters want to be where they're from, and some characters would prefer to be from any other place. But it's bone deep. The place in a character. And I've always tried to, like, when I was writing Borrowed Horses, I was trying to get the feel of Northern Idaho into that book. It was just the sense of scope, the sky, the stretch of that enormous sky above you that you get in the West. And it was a challenge. And as I was writing it, a friend of mine in grad school, who's an amazing poet named Melissa Crow, was reading it. And she said, she was from Maine, and she said, oh, Maine and Idaho have a lot in common. And I was like, really? And she said, I mean, pine trees and potatoes. But she said also, we're both writing about places that are exotic. And I thought, oh, yeah, I thought of the palm trees and the sandy beaches of Northern Idaho. Yeah, yeah. And I thought, of course, yeah, exotic. But no, what I realized was that she was right. She said most people have never been to Idaho. Most people have never been to central Maine. Mm-hmm. And when you put that on the page, you can take a person to a place that they've never been before. And that's a powerful thing. And so that's always been a challenge that I've had for my writing, is to take people to a place that's exotic, even if that place is home.
Mm-hmm. I'm Amanda Luzader. So I have lived in Utah pretty much my whole life, just a couple years where I lived in Idaho. But otherwise, I've been from Utah. And I write speculative fiction, so a lot of them are taking place in other worlds or end of the world type scenarios, but it's much easier for me to write settings of places that I'm familiar with. And the wonderful thing about having lived in Utah is that there is so much material. We have mountains, we have deserts, we have the salt flats, we have red rocks, and you know, four seasons. And so even though I've only lived in this one state, I have so much material to draw for my writing. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to getting to experience more destinations in my life and perhaps living somewhere else. But for now, I'm happy to be in Utah and to have experienced the settings here.
Brad Rokar. I believe that most writers write, I think all writers write, what they know about. And it's difficult to escape your environment that you live in and grew up in and not know something about it. If we write about what we know, then we write about where we live. Now, that being said, we also write about what we don't know and what we can imagine and what we can experience or imagine to experience or actually move and imagine that. So traveling or going places is another important part, I think, of most writers' lives and the experience they have in order to write what they write about. So you can't escape it. Your environment, where you live, how you live, who you live with, is going to influence your writing, influence your imagination, what you're going to write. So it's a very important thing. I think most writers recognize that, and it makes for an interesting life. Because in the long run, what you're doing, writers are also great observers. So I don't know many writers who don't like to move out of their comfort zone and observe something else, no matter where you live or what you're doing. So, and if we can't move out of that physically, I think we do through our imaginations. It's really important.
This is Chad Van Zandt. What was the question again?
I don't even remember. It was a while ago. I think it was something to do with.
Is it what we? Just a perspective.
Yeah, just a perspective.
I write outdoor essays, and I'm writing about the West, about the ground and the rivers and mountains, and it's a great, not just Utah but the West. What I find really fascinating about the West is that all of the decisions and all of the conflicts and all of the sort of settling that has already taken place in much of the country is still being worked out here. Disputes about water and disputes about land and private versus public and hippies versus cops, whatever you want to say, Mormons versus everybody else. Those conflicts are taking place right now, and we're watching everything kind of settle. Things that happened, you know, 100 or 150 years ago elsewhere is happening right now, and getting to write about those things, like land conflicts and water conflicts, writing about those things as they relate to my interest, my primary interest, which is fly fishing, is really fascinating. You know, becoming part of that record, becoming part of that dialogue, and observing that in a way that other people can't is particularly satisfying.
Yeah, I think it's a really good that we actually ended with Chad, because Chad really does. I mean, his books are about the rivers, you know, and so it's a nice, that was much longer than I thought it would be, but that's good. I mean, I was driving down here thinking what the first question should be, and I think that worked. I think that was successful. Good job. Hey, you know, you get them every once in a while.
Patting yourself on the back. That's awesome.
Well, no one else is gonna do it, so you know, so I will. So my next question is really a quick one, and it goes back to Shane asked me before if I would ask everybody what their process was. Was that you that asked me that? Who was it? Oh, I know. Yeah, so here's part of the process question. What is your beverage of choice while writing? Mine is I'm a coffee guy. I've tried to write with alcohol in my blood, and it just turns out to anything on the page is just like, you know, the old saying, write drunk, edit sober. Yeah. I would, if I've, Chad knows it. Well, that was my question. No, for me, it's like if anything that came out the night before was just, there's no revising it. The great part about this group is, I've read all of your work. I feel extremely fortunate that way, because before each podcast, I got to read all of your work. And this panel is just set up of really, really, really good writers. And it's a privilege to just chat with you. So what's your beverage, Danielle? Do you see how I segued into that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm a tea drinker, like a constant tea drinker. Like when I was in grad school, I would put a pot of tea on in the morning and take it, you know, have my cup of tea while I was getting ready, and then take a cup of tea on the train, and then get another cup of tea before I went to class. And then at break, I'd refill it and get another cup of tea. And then I'd go teach and get another cup of tea. On break, I'd get another cup of tea. So tea. And, but I like to be, really thoughtful about the tea. Like I like to think about the moment, and I like to think about the work that I'm doing, and try to think about like what kind of mood I'd like to be in. Do I want to be caffeinated? Do I want to be like chamomile mellow? It sounds stupid, right?
Well, but to our audience, they thought that the question was silly, right? Danielle just made it serious.
Yeah. But I do think about it, and I just like to drink copious amounts of tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but the whole mood setting thing, Yeah.
So this is Shane. I try to have as few rules for what I need when I write as possible, because I've got, like many people here, work and kids and carpools and everything else. So if I start putting any sort of like I need coffee or I need tea or I need bourbon on it, it limits when I can write, which is a bad thing. That said, I generally have one of those things going at some point in the day, or wine or water or seltzer or something.
Anything liquid.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Liquid is good.
Okay. That's good. In a beverage. The best beverages have liquid in them.
This is Allison, and at risk of sounding really weird, I definitely spend a lot of time contemplating the infinite and just staring at the walls and strange images until something other than myself moves me.
Mm-hmm. Beverage? I think that is it's
that's beverage. What is beverage, what is that called? What is
available
that
at your available at your
cosmic elixir. It's a cosmos.
Yeah, available at Costco.
Is that a 3-2, or can you get that in a high point? I like to draw. I like to write ripped drunk sometimes. It's I find that I get brave and I get bold and I get uninhibited and words are coming out, and if you've read something of mine that you like, probably part of it was written while I was insensible, and it's hard liquor, it's whiskey or rum or vodka. Let's say vodka.
Vodka. Spirits.
Yeah.
I want to write with Chad.
I know.
I go out when the sun's shining to get material, and then when the sun goes down, that's when I write, and that just seems to go with vodka. Mm-hmm. Not always. I don't want to come off like a lush.
No, don't worry in this group.
This is Amanda, and I am also a big tea drinker. I love tea, black tea especially. The later it gets in the day, it changes to green, to white, to herbal. But my preference would be black tea.
That's a Brad.
Well, black coffee in the morning, mm-hmm. straight, period. I don't like even the Italian names for it, so.
like Folgers.
Yeah. So black coffee in the morning, yeah. From April to about the middle of September, it's straight gin martinis. From September until April is Manhattans.
In the morning?
No, this is at night. This is cocktail hour.
Yeah.
And then red wine all the time, mm-hmm. unless I'm eating fish.
We're still talking about writing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Is this just daily habits?
Yeah, well, I seldom go a day that I don't indulge in those habits.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why I would want to.
Well, we're.
I want to write with Brad.
I want to write with Brad.
I think I just want to go to a party with all of you and be sober and watch you all write.
Tonight at 9 o'clock.
And Case, you said you read my poetry. You read that? So what this gentleman said about letting himself go little bit, Chad, that's frightening because I don't drink. So that was sober. What you read was sober. All that stuff was sober. When I get up between 4 and 5 a.m. to write, because I always have, I don't know how it happens, but magically coffee with creamer appears to my left. I keep writing, and then a really cool like smoothie appears at my left, and it's got all kinds of kale and spinach and some berries and protein and stuff in it, and I drink that, and then it magically disappears, and I don't know where it goes. And then I drink that coffee, that cup of coffee, until I'm done writing, which is usually when I go for a run, which is around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I have no idea really what happens during that time other than a lot of words appear on my screen and I'm drinking these beverages that a magic thing brings to me. I'm thinking it's my husband. I'm
thinking
sure.
So too.
But if it is, I'm really grateful because that coffee lasts me all day long. So, and I never finish it.
This is Deborah. I write in the mornings, and so black coffee, freshly ground. But oddly, the main character of my recent novel is a writer, and she's a recovering alcoholic. And as soon as she stopped drinking, she couldn't write anymore. And that's a plot line that follows. Failure. Failure. Oh, you feel her, yeah. It follows her throughout the book. But no, freshly ground, either my husband or myself, and we have a whole ritual of our morning coffee, and I write for several hours, I think, on that juice, and then I'm worn out.
Well, and we didn't, sorry, Sean, I'm gonna step in for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. So... Sean and I were up late last night, and we were joking that
we were not writing.
We were not writing. We were definitely indulging, and we've come a long way. We met each other 10 years ago, and we've been best writing friends and everything for a long time. And we were up doing something really artistic last night. We were drinking beer and whiskey and commenting on Marvel's Infinity War.
It was a critical it was a critical viewing
yes,
of the story.
Of story.
It was amazing.
And plot.
Should have put that in the podcast.
We should. And it's really interesting is, and Shane's going to, I'm looking sideways at her because I'm going to talk about process. Because I know it was tongue-in-cheek, but here we are talking about process. But if, I don't know if you listen to Deborah's podcast, but what her process with writing is, she reads everything she's written up until that point, and then for a novel, and then writes after it. And Sean, what do you have? Because that just blows my mind. Still to this day.
My process or drinking?
Drinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I write in the morning as well, so I usually start with a light beer and then go into the bourbon. No, there's only one Bukowski. I can't. I tried. Can't do that. But what I do is a little different. I just drink water out of mason jars. But I always, whatever I'm writing, and a lot of people, I don't know if people can do this or not, but I just put together a little, like a soundtrack to it, like on Spotify, like a playlist. And that's what helps me out. I don't know. Gives me like mood. And it's the same song, so I know it's like time to write that part. But like you're saying, you try to write anywhere you can. But I'm lucky enough to be able to sit at home and do it for a couple hours a day.
Thank you all. This is going fast. We only have like what? We would. I feel bad for them. You know, they come to hear us read. They can't be here at 11. Does anybody from the... Thanks. Yeah, awesome. Does anybody from the audience have a question for these folks? I mean, the gamut of genre writers, of just award winners on this panel is... I said panel. That's so academic. On this podcast, on this half moon chair, that because my next question is probably worse than yours.
He doesn't have a next question.
I do. I do. I have one. I scribbled it down right there.
I know what he was doing last night.
No? All right. Okay, start you. Abraham, you don't got a question? I know you could come up with some.
Well, like in the last half of the year, what's a book that you've been kind of Snapchatting all your friends or pushing on other people? Or maybe not like in the last half of the year, but in the last half of the year.
Yeah, the question from Abraham Smith is, in the last year, what books have you been Snapchatting? I don't have Snapchat, but what books have you been kind of trying to get out there? For me, it's all these people. If I would start, honestly, Code Girls by Liz Mundy, that was an amazing book, and it's a book about how she went, the author, she also wrote Michelle Obama's biography, which was another really good book, and I'm a big fan of her writing. It's about how she went and uncovered what the women in World War II did to break all the German and Japanese codes, and they weren't able to even discuss it until the mid-1990s when they pulled that top secret tab off of it, and many of the women went to their graves never telling husbands or family members or kids that they were actually in Arlington breaking Japanese and Nazi codes in World War II, and they were a big part of really breaking kind of the Pacific War. It's a book that, as a nonfiction writer who does creative nonfiction, who does a lot of research-based nonfiction, I look to what she had done with that book and think maybe someday I could do a project like that, but it's a long way off because it was really that awesome. Yeah.
We go this way.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah,
I want to get another beer. It's my process. Yeah, good. It's my process. Now, when I fight fires in the summer, I take about 12 books out and I'll go through them. And I've been really, and I make people read them too. So I've really been pushing Patrick DeWitt. He's a local Portland writer. Awesome guy. The Sisters Brothers is an amazing book. It's turning into a movie with Joaquin Phoenix and John C. Reilly. It's coming out, or it's already came out. He just did another one. Major Domo.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's funny. It's a good book and it's funny. And I just bought his new book, The French. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm blanking. But all of his stuff is really good. All of Lydia Yukinovich's stuff is really good. Chuck Palahniuk, he's a great guy. I love just talking about Western writers. I got the little Pacific Northwest clique, so, and I love them all. So, but like you too, I have a lot of friends who write, so I would try to push all of their books.
Yeah, and I can recommend everybody's books.
One writer that I really enjoy a lot is Miriam Toews. She's a Canadian author. She wrote All My Puny Sorrows, which just the title alone is so perfect. And it's a book I use often when I teach. But she has a new book coming out. It's already out in Canada. And it comes out in the States in April. But I couldn't wait, so I ordered it on Amazon.Canada, not knowing you could do that. And I just read it, and almost straight through, and it's called Women Are Talking. And I think this book is going to be very, very talked about. Mm-hmm. She grew up in a Mennonite family, and this book is based on a true story of a Mennonite group of women, and I won't tell you too much because it's a little complicated, but it's dark, and the scope of it is very, very large. It's on the face of it, it looks like a simple story, but it's very far reaching. And I think the book is going to probably make a lot of waves, get a lot of attention.
I'm kind of embarrassed because the last book I read, it's such a dick thing to say. It's a dick thing to say. I'm gonna say it. I'm sorry. I finished Infinite Jest, and then I turned around, and then I finished Infinite Jest again. I read it two times in a row because that's how much I loved it. When I find an author with a voice that speaks to me, I can't get enough. So I started with Pale King, actually, by David Foster Wallace. Oh, this is Julianne, by the way. Sorry about that. Yeah. So I started with Pale King.
Bury your testimony.
What's that? I've got to bury my testimony. So I started with Pale King, and then Infinite Jest was it just needed two reads, and I was laughing so hard I was crying, and I'm reading these sections to my husband, and he's like, yeah, that's hilarious, because it's out of context literally while you're reading it. It's out of context, which is kind of awesome. But a new writer I found who I love is his name is Joshua Ferris, and his book, To Rise Again at a Decent Hour, I gotta say, even when I say the title, I choke up because it's a very lighthearted, very funny book. And at the same time, there are parts in that book, especially because I don't know about all of you who are fiction writers, but that's work. That's work. I read nonfiction for pleasure. I mean, that work is fiction because I'm reading it and I'm paying attention to everything and I'm going, oh my God, look what he did there. Look what he did there. And Joshua Ferris is just a new up-and-coming, well, he's been out there a while, but he's fantastic. Right now I'm reading, she's a email friend associate, Jenny Egan's new book, and the name just totally escaped me, but she won the Manhattan Beach, there we go. I think a billion books are named to that. Anyway, I'm reading that right now and I'm enjoying that, so. But Goon Squad was good too, so.
This is Brad. I've been reading Sappho all summer, which has been really good.
And, cool.
Yeah, there you go. And for the last 3 days, I've been revisiting Philip Larkin because a friend of mine asked me what I knew about him. So I decided to, and I found him fascinating. And it's led me back to some Thomas Hardy and stuff. So that's what I've been doing lately.
This is Amanda again. So one of the genres I write in is horror, but I don't actually consume a lot of horror material, movies or books, because I am so easily scared. And it's really difficult for me to take in that type of material because then I'm not able to sleep, at least not with the lights out. Or wake up. And Chad has teased me endlessly this summer because I was looking for a book recommendation, and he recommended Misery by Stephen King, and I read it, and I absolutely loved it. Just thought it was brilliant, loved how it was about a writer, loved the metaphors that were used, and so I was talking to Chad, I'm like, this is really great, this is good stuff, and he's like, oh yeah, what did you say?
Well, the story goes that she was looking for a recommendation, and I gave her the recommendation, and she came back to me and said, man, this guy is good. This guy is really quite talented. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of people think that about Stephen King.
So he's been giving me a hard time about that. But
he really knows what he's doing.
He does. I mean, he's a talented writer. So
I've heard.
So I'm aspiring to be like Stephen King now.
I read Infinite Jest in college and didn't understand probably about 85% of it. So just this past year, I got together a book club to read Infinite Jest, and we got about, on my Kindle it said, I think 27%, and we quit meeting. So I still don't understand Infinite Jest. It is hilarious, but I failed at that. Something that I brag about a lot is that I like to read Moby Dick every single year, and I don't. It's So if you've heard me say that, that was a lie. It's more like about every 3 years, and I read that this year, and I finished it. I got through it because I read quote unquote the last third of it on this thing called Big Read. They did Moby Dick and Benedict Cumberbatch and Tilda Swinton and Stephen Fry and all these great writers. One poet whose name escapes me right now, or she's an essayist. She read her. It's like a different chapter. All these great writers and great celebrities with wonderful voices are reading, you know, a chapter, a piece of Moby Dick, and it's just wonderful. They're different characterizations and their different take on the, you know, on the expressiveness of that book. But one lady was reading from a research vessel, like headed to the Arctic Circle. So it was really, you know, just a lot of moodiness. And then I have been reading Star Coolbrook's book of poetry called Both Ends from the Middle, the Middle from Both Ends. And she was supposed to be sitting right there, mm-hmm. but she's not. And it's wonderful. It's got old poetry that I've heard her read 20 times, and it's got new poems that are just fantastic. And it tells of her journey from kind of this, you know, really a hayseed lady living in Preston, Idaho, to awakening and becoming, you know, just a kind of a brilliant poet.
This is Allison. One book that I recommend to people, which I'm sure they never pick up, is the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Other translations are the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. My father's 84 right now. He's in a nursing facility. Some people have told me that they don't think he can read anymore. And I gave him a copy of that book, and he read it so eloquently, as if he'd read it before. And he said, "I think I know this book." And I said, "I think you do too." Mm-hmm. And he said, "I had a dream one night." He's in a really difficult circumstance. And in the dream, I went to a fireplace, and there was a mantelpiece, what do they call that? And there was a book there, and I took down the book. It was a very old book, and I opened it. And in that book was everything I needed to get through this tough time. And I had been wondering before he told me about this dream whether I should give him the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, or if that was maybe too much for his state of Alzheimer's. So that's one thing. We all live and we all die, and I think we should all read that book. Beyond that, there's a book I'm reading right now called Hooked: The Rise of Addictive Technology. And I think that a lot of us, well, what's happening now to our brains as human beings, I think it would be worth it. We take these things for granted that we think that we're using them. They're using us. And I think if we step back and we read and we learn about our own minds and how they're being controlled by certain technologies, corporations, it's a lifesaver. It's not just a lifesaver personally, but it could save civilization. I read recently that in marketing, they're going to start to use scents in terms of smells. So in a subconscious level, they're going to insert that into maybe our devices or things that we have to get us to purchase things. And I think if we want to be autonomous individuals, first of all, I'm glad that we all still read and write and that we're not just, you know, clicking the next miniseries. That's a big step. Anyway, sorry, rant. I promised I wouldn't rant. No rant.
But it does bring us back to this idea of, like, the books that we got on social media about and campaigned for that Abe had asked about. And the last one, this is going back a little bit, but the last one that I really got sort of evangelical about was Marlon James' Book of Night Women, which is a harrowing, brutal, and utterly gripping novel about slavery, and I highly recommend it. And then the book I'm reading right now, which I also highly recommend, is Tessa Fontaine's Electric Woman, which bounces back and forth between her adventures in the circus, or like a sideshow. Freak show, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and then her mother's recovery from a massive stroke. And it's amazing.
I just finished it. She was supposed to be booked on 25th on on Wednesday night, but she had gotten in a car accident, and so she wasn't able to make it. And she was in Logan last night, but it's really, I second that. It's a really good book. Yeah.
As a poet, I read novels and I read plenty of nonfiction, but the majority of literature that I consume is poetry. And two of the books, the collections that I have loved and read over and over again the last 6 months have been debut collections by two coincidentally good friends of mine. Diana Koinian's Ghost Of is really beautiful, and Emily Youngman Yoon's A Cruelty Special to Our Species is also really beautiful. They're both just like deeply heartbreaking books, especially if you know the person writing it and you know the content, and you know like the surrounding of the poem. As a poet who is like carefully workshopping her own debut collection, it's so lovely to see your friends succeed and like have something good happen for them, and not just have something good, but something like absolutely breathtakingly gorgeous happen for them. So.
Thank you. We're going to wrap it up, but that's a great way to end this podcast. What Danielle said, I wish all the writers like that. What did you say? How did you say it? Breathtakingly gorgeous in your writing career comes around the corner here with any second for all of us. This is Case Johnston. This is a Literally podcast. We're recording from the Good Company Theater special event where we brought together a lot of the folks, readers that have been on the podcast over the last couple years. If you are unfamiliar with any of their books, I suggest that you go look them up, buy their books, put money in their pockets so they can write other wonderful books. Thank you all so much for joining us. Please get some food, get a drink. We're going to set up tables for books so the authors can sell their books. So if you came wanting to buy books from the authors, we'll have those tables set up after the first reading. All right, thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. This episode of Literally is sponsored by Lexicon and Line. Case, tell us a little something about Lexicon and Line.
Lexicon and Line, it does three things. They are communications consultants, they teach professional business writing and speaking courses, and they are research and data evaluation experts.
And you can find everything about Lexicon and Line at lexiconandline.com. Please give them a visit, and thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast, Lexicon and Line.